Some only visible in darkness.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to yet another exciting episode of the Vinnie Eastwood Show, broadcasting on the VinnieEastwoodShow.com. That's Vinnie with a Y, because it's the most important question, and Eastwood hasn't go ahead. Make my news. So visit there, please, and go ahead. Start up a $5 a month donation today and support the alternative media. My very special guest coming at us live is Bruce Maccabee. Bruce, welcome to the program.
Thank you. I'm delighted to be here.
It's fantastic to have you. Now, I would really love it if you'd explain just a little bit about who you are and what you do for this segment.
Well, I'm a retired Navy physicist for the U.S. Navy. I spent 36 years doing various science research jobs for the Navy. Way back in the 60s, when I was working for my PhD at American University in Washington, D.C., I became interested in the subject of UFOs, and in the 70s, started doing independent research, analyzing a number of cases and so on, one of which happened to be the December 1978 New Zealand sightings off the Kaikoura Coast, and I've continued investigating sightings since then. One of them that's most famous probably is the Japan Airlines 1628 jumbo jet over Alaska sightings. The most important present situation is I just published a book called the FBI-CIA UFO Connection, which is based on unquestionably authentic government documents which show, have evidence that the top Air Force officials and perhaps probably others in the government back in the late 40s and early 50s had already concluded that UFOs were interplanetary. They just didn't tell anybody. They tried to poo-poo the whole thing for it. And that's the situation that we're in right now, that the government officially, the U.S. government officially says there's nothing to it, and if you try to make a report to the government, they tell you to go away and make a report to the Mutual UFO Network or something like that.
The flying disc runaround.
What?
They give you the old flying disc runaround routine.
Well, basically they say there's no evidence that they have investigated which points towards interplanetary or ET, or whatever you want to call it. They would say that all sightings could be explained as misidentifications, hoaxes, or delusions. And what I'm saying in this book is by analyzing the government documents that are available now, which weren't available 60 years ago, you can find evidence that the top Air Force officials had already concluded by 1952 that UFOs, or at least some things people report in the sky, unidentified flying objects, some of them appear to be interplanetary or ET spaceships or whatever you want to call it.
Can I ask, how do you think they made that conclusion?
Well, they studied sightings, right? This UFO phenomenon sort of began in June 24, 1947, with Kenneth Arnold sighting near Mount Rainier. And within a few weeks, there had been hundreds of sightings from other places in the United States and some other places in the world. And many of the witnesses were Air Force pilots. And so they set up a project to investigate, which turned out to be called Project Sign, and concluded in Project Sign that these things, some of the sightings were interplanetary, and that was based on, well, these were the experts in aeronautical engineering who were doing these analyses. And in 1952, during the big flap of sightings that happened over the Washington, D.C. area and really throughout the whole United States in June, July, and August of 1952, on the same day that General John A. Sanford, the head of Air Force Intelligence, gave a press conference in Washington, D.C. to explain all the sightings, on that same day, July 29, 1952, the FBI was told by a person who worked in the Air Force Intelligence Office, the FBI was told that top Air Force officials are seriously considering interplanetary ships as an explanation for some of the sightings. The hardest ones to explain, 2 or 3% of the sightings of which there was no theory they could explain in conventional terms.
What was the military's response to this? Because in my studies of history, whenever the military experiences a new weapon or a new piece of technology that they haven't seen before, they often start developing weapons and technology of their own to counteract it or defend against it or compete against it. Do you believe the U.S. government has been developing advanced aircraft and things of that nature based upon these sightings?
I don't have any evidence that they developed anything based on the sightings. There are claims of what might be called technology transfer. Assuming that, for example, if there really was a crash at Roswell, we might have figured out some of the stuff that's involved. But it's been my own opinion that whatever's flying around out there is so far ahead of us we can barely understand it. I don't think we've developed any effective defense against what are commonly in the old days called flying saucers.
The poet Robert Frost said there's either two possibilities. One, we're completely alone in the universe, or two, we're not. And both prospects are terrifying to me.
Yep.
How do you think that this actually affects how we look at the world? I mean, if you're saying that, yes, there's UFOs, yes, they're from another planet, and no, we have absolutely no way of defending against them if they chose to get hostile, is that a conclusion that, that you're driving with? Or?
Yeah, first of all, you have to reach the conclusion that there is some fraction of UFO sightings which are unexplainable in conventional means. And then, given that, you take those particular sightings and analyze the heck out of what the information is that the witness has. Sometimes you get more than just a witness testimony. Sometimes you get photos or film or magnetic detections or something. And the New Zealand sightings of December 31st, 1978, you had multiple witness sightings of people on the airplane. It was traveling from Wellington south to Christchurch in the middle of the night carrying newspapers. He also had a news crew on board the airplane, oddly enough. You got car movie film, and there was airplane radar and ground radar, all involved over the period of about 2 hours that these sightings occurred. I concluded from that there was really something going on that couldn't be explained.
Well, just because it's unexplained, I mean, I was thinking about military classified aircraft, like many, many aircraft, even from B-2 bombers, F-117 Nighthawks. They were kind of referred to as sort of like conspiracy theories and things of that nature before the government actually released the technology. But in your experience being an old Navy man, you say that there's absolutely no possibility that they could make anything like a flying saucer in a classified facility somewhere with unlimited resources.
Well, you say anything like a flying saucer. I don't think they've duplicated flying saucer technology. They might be able to make something that looks like it, but, you know, the classic shape of being a circular object with a dome in the center or something like that, I don't think they have anything shaped like that that can fly and hover and take off at high speed so fast sometimes that the thing seems to disappear.
I'm not
saying that there's no technology anywhere that hasn't been developed based on flying saucers. Oddly enough, there's a document, and it comes from early 1949, in which a guy who worked for a program called the Nuclear Energy for the Propulsion of Aircraft, NEPA project. The NEPA project was, he says, given impetus by the presence of green fireballs and flying saucers. And he said this to the FBI.
What I find interesting is that people who deny the existence of UFOs, and even the title itself, don't you think it's a little bit disingenuous? Oh, it's just an unidentified flying object. I mean, have we been able to identify anything of any kind about these things so as to mean that we don't have to use the UFO terminology anymore? Has there been any of these flying objects that are actually identified?
Well, some people may know a lot more about them than I do, and things like where they came from and why they're here. That may be knowledge that's available in a top secret compartmentalized type of knowledge of, I would suspect it would be a government contractor rather than the government itself running the project. I spent 15 years visiting the CIA as a result of work that I was doing in the Navy on laser-generated underwater sound. I put this for the first time into my book. It's published for the first time. In this book, I was talking about the FBI-CIA UFO connection. And I got to know what was going on in the CIA pretty well. And
could you elucidate on that?
I wasn't able to identify any evidence that the CIA was running a big project. That doesn't mean there wasn't one somewhere off to the side, as I said, in a government contractor. And I'm sure there are people who know a lot more about the UFOs themselves than I do, but. Significant that I've been able to provide evidence that the government knew about, the Air Force knew that these things were far beyond us, interplanetary to use their terminology. And I think the government knew this way back in 1948 and 49.
And why haven't they released that information to the public?
Well, you'd have to ask. Well, first of all, that information has been released now. Freedom of Information Act requests and just plain government declassification of documents has resulted in a lot of information being available. Starting in the middle 80s and going up until the present time, documents are being released. But back at the time they were this is happening, back in the late 40s and early 50s, the Air Force wasn't telling anybody anything. The Air Force didn't say anything positive about the subject. It basically said, we're investigating, we're not finding anything, which was essentially a lie. And when General John A. Sanford, at his press conference on July 29th, tried to explain everything away, all the hundreds of sightings in the United States, some of which are published in the book, when he tried to explain to the general public and the press soaked it up, you might say, that as far as he was concerned, everything was natural phenomena. As I pointed out earlier, somebody in his office of the Air Force Intelligence told an FBI agent that, oh, by the way, interplanetary is being considered as a possible explanation.
It's just being floated as a possible explanation. They honestly don't know. Why the secrecy?
There's another document mentioned in my book that most people don't know about by a guy who later on became the conceptual father of the Strategic Defense Initiative, a guy by the name of Stephen Passoni. And he wrote in the document that the Air Force cannot assume that flying saucers are interplanetary. And the key word here is assume. The way he writes this document, and it means that the top Air Force officials that he was writing this document for assumed that flying saucers were interplanetary. In other words, they knew it by 1952.
But, of course, they're not making a big public ordeal about this. Oh, by the way, we just assume there's aliens and assume that these flying aircraft are completely outside of our control and we can't resist them even if we tried, because goodness knows what kind of technology they'd get. I mean, there's pretty obvious reasons why they wouldn't tell that, you know, blatantly to the public and repeat it in mainstream media 1,000 times a day, isn't there?
Well, they wouldn't want to have the general public realize that there are things flying around that the Air Force can't do anything about.
Well, a lot of people believe this already, and what are they freaking out about it or anything? I think if these aliens aren't really doing anything bad or whatever, and they're just flying around, are there any speculations into government documents as to why they're actually coming here? Because I was researching this a little bit, and apparently there is a significantly higher percentage of abduction stories in the continental U.S. than anywhere else on Earth. Have you heard that?
Well, I'm not familiar with the statistics of the distribution throughout the world of abduction stories. I wouldn't be surprised. I think starting in the early 60s with the so-called first cases, the most important one being the Betty and Barney Hill case, the idea of abduction grew through the 1970s, and then by the 1980s, there are a lot of cases on record of people claiming to have been abducted, or these abductions. Initially, a lot of the people remembered UFO sightings, but they had the situation of missing time, and it required hypnosis to fill in what the missing time situation was. But the abduction stories are probably the only source we have of information. Something from the abduction stories as to what they're doing around here. My own feeling is the theory of hybridization and assimilation, where they get assimilated into our society, seems reasonable based on what I know. But there are other.
Are you talking about like a genetic infiltration of human DNA so that they can? That whatever off-world creatures can make themselves look like us, kind of thing.
That could be. I mean, I'm not nailed down to any one explanation. but I did investigate the sightings in Gulf Breeze, Florida, and the chief person there, the one who was took all the pictures, was evidently an abductee, and what he told me implied that he was being used as a example of human reaction to the situation that a human being might find himself in. And in his stories where he would be put into a situation, and then after it was all over and he had done some reaction to whatever the situation was, then he would be sort of connected up with a headgear. And in some room, he would be sitting in a table or something with his headgear attached. And then some creatures would come in, some little ones and one big one would come in, and they put headgear on the little ones. And then all of a sudden, he'd find himself reliving whatever the experience was that he had earlier. so it looked like he was doing some sort of teaching of the little ones how to react to situations. I know it sounds bizarre, but it takes quite a while to be sufficiently detailed in these descriptions to
I look at it like if a rat got released from a lab and he said, "Hey, dude, there was these really, really massive creatures with these huge white suits on and stuff like that, and they had, like, face masks and glasses over, and they had all this really advanced technology, and they put me in a maze, bro. They got me to run around and stuff, and they fed me really good cheese, and I don't know what the hell they were talking about or what they were doing, but now I've got this massive tumor." You know, and the other rats would just go, "Bro, you're crazy. You know, you've been chewing on the power cables again, haven't you?"
Yeah, well, that's not too far from what the implication would be of this man's experiences.
And so, I think it's like if we're a lower organism to these creatures, of course, their intentions and whatever technology they've got would be, of course, incomprehensible to us, wouldn't they? Because we wouldn't know what we were looking at from what scale.
Like Arthur C. Clarke's comment about sufficiently advanced technology appears to be magic.
Precisely. Now, I was just thinking about this. Wernher von Braun, he said that there would be three wars that would change humanity and usher us into a new world order. The first would be the Second World War, the second would be a global war on terrorism, and the third would be an alien invasion. And he said that they'd be working on maybe staging an alien invasion. And I was always wondering, kind of curious, like, are there human beings, elements in the government or something like that? I wonder what the possibility is that there are actually really, really bad people on Earth right now that are working with really, really nasty alien scum from across the stars trying to work out some kind of agenda to enslave the rest of the human race.
Well, I don't know. And it may be that way back as far as the late 40s and early 50s, the government did know something about these interplanetary craft and the creatures on the inside, which made the government people or whoever knew had this information say, "We better not tell anybody because this could be detrimental to civilization." At the very least, realization that UFOs, quote, UFOs are real, unquote, which is a sort of a generic, non-specific term, I should really say AFCs, alien flying craft, are real. And knowing that that's true can have an impact, especially if you know that that's true and abductions take place, because that means there's some sort of direct interaction between them and us. And at the very least, that introduces a new uncertainty into civilization, which already has enough uncertainty. And uncertainty in civilization is detrimental to the continuation of civilization, especially if uncertainty is something like they can grab you at any time and do anything they want to you. We all hear about the references to probes of various types being inserted in various places.
You see, well, and, the thing is, to me, that doesn't have to involve an alien, you know, if you've ever lived in Soviet Russia or something like that, a commissar or a gulag or something of that nature, they can grab you at any time. They can come and get you. It's almost like there's a similar behavioral pattern to tyrannical governments and scumbaggery within the human condition as to how a lot of alleged alien reports come out, you know, dark, shadowy, don't care about you, scare the hell out of your family and make you live in fear.
Yeah, well, things can happen caused by human beings. And I've often said, if I had to be choose between being abducted by humans and abducted by aliens, I'd pick the aliens.
I mean, that'd at least be a lot more fun.
yeah.
Hey, speaking of which, I have a joke for you. Do you know how aliens repair their damaged spacecraft?
No.
With abduct tape.
Abduct tape? Oh, yeah. My goodness. I can just see a big roll of abduct tape coming down from high up above and sticking onto somebody, and then they get pulled up by this very strong abduct tape.
Yeah, they snare them. All right. Well, Bruce, it's been really wonderful chatting with you, and we've got about a minute left in the segment. Would you be able to rattle off your website, any other places where perhaps objects where someone can get your book?
Do check up on www.brumac.8k, that's the number 8, letter K, .com, rumac.8k.com, or simply Google on Bruce McAbee and you'll get to my website. From there you can scroll down a little ways and you'll find links to get the book from Amazon. It's doing very well. And you can find 100 megabytes or more of other cases, analyses that I looked at, like the Battle of Los Angeles and New Zealand and Japan Airlines, and it'll take me a while just to list the number of cases I've got detailed analyses on my website.
Well, thank you very much, Bruce, and thank you, ladies and gentlemen, for listening up. Tune in right after the break. We'll be back in just a few minutes. Make sure that you go to thevinnyeastwoodshow.com and check out our sponsors at the bottom of the page there, including Blue Shield to protect yourself from that nasty EMF radiation. I'm not sure if it'll protect you from a duct tape. We'll be right back.